Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Motorsport Republica, episode 46.
Yeah, what an omen.
Big weekend of racing, both F1 and MotoGP, and obviously the lower categories in the Middle East. So, got a lot to cover today.
Yeah, MotoGP's back, racing's back.
Yep.
It's all under lights. Doesn't get any better.
I was sitting there watching that race, MotoGP especially, and just thinking, how good's this? These young kids coming through.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so exciting, both MotoGP and Formula One. We've seen a couple of stars born over the weekend in your Ollie Bearman and your Pedro Acosta.
I know, just what crazy debuts, one of them under amazing circumstances as well. That obviously took everyone by surprise, and then Pedro as well coming in. Like, we've spoken about him a lot, but, you know, to do what he did already in his first race is pretty incredible.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And James, to your credit, you've called, I'm not going to say he's guaranteed a podium this year, but it almost looks certain. But he just looks so amazing on the bike.
So comfortable. Like, he's just been there for years. It's just, he just obviously dropped off.
Yeah.
He dropped off at the end of tyre wear.
It's experience, though.
Yeah, there's a funny quote about that. But
we're gonna cover MotoGP here first today.
Yeah.
But yeah, just seeing him and catching Marquez, and it was just amazing to see. And six months ago, like, I just didn't see this happening.
Nah, and all I was thinking about when he was fighting with Marquez was Marquez fighting with Rossi back in 2013, and then it was like the changing of the guard again. It's Pedro Acosta fighting with Marc Marquez. Like,
I think we'll remember this race for a long time.
He just exploded obviously onto the scene. He's just been so fast. As what's his name from Tech 3? The French guy runs it. I'm having a mental blank. He's just like, we've just found a diamond, like a diamond.
Akiayo?
Okay. Whatever his name is, a French guy, Tech 3 racing director. Mm. He's just like, yeah, we just found a diamond, you know, just landed in their team. So, oh, good on him, seriously.
Yeah, it's incredible. And going back and looking at the start of the race, you got some results for us as well, James, just for the listeners.
Yeah. So I'll go run through both races. So we got the sprint race. Jorge Martin won, Brad Binder second, surprise with Aleix Espargaró third. Had some really, really good late race pace. Pecco Bagnaia fourth, Marc Marquez fifth on his debut, Enea Bastianini sixth, Alex Marquez seventh, Pedro Acosta eighth, Maverick Vinales ninth, and Jack Miller 10th. And so obviously the main race, Tom, Pecco Bagnaia first, had an incredible race. Brad Binder second, Jorge Martin third, Marc Marquez fourth, Bastianini fifth, Alex Marquez sixth, Digia seventh, Aleix Espargaró eighth, Pedro Acosta ninth, and Maverick Vinales 10th.
Still amazes me how the results are so different between a sprint and a main race.
Yeah. It
shows how important the start is.
Yeah.
You look at Bagnaia just controlling it like he controls it.
And it just seemed like tyres were a massive play in all categories this round. So I know Aleix Espargaró had rear tyre problems throughout basically the whole main race, where a sprint race, he was obviously fighting and had a podium. So
yeah, I mean, tyre chat, so super important.
Mm. Let's just get right into it. For you, straight off the bat, most impressive, biggest surprise, and most disappointing?
Well, I think we've touched on this already, but Acosta has to be the most impressive thing.
Yeah.
And definitely the most impressive debut since Marc Marquez.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, what, 11 years ago?
Yeah, whatever it is, yeah.
It's just such an exciting prospect. We've had a lot of young talent come through, but just that, and we talk about this a lot on the show, that X factor that he showed, it was just incredible. It really was.
On a year-old bike.
A year-old bike. Yeah. I mean, wasn't that a scene? Miller rolling through the gravel trap and Acosta coming from, you know, what was he on the grid? 8th or 9th?
Yeah.
Up to 6th.
Yeah.
And then passing up to 3rd. And then obviously had that late tire trouble. But that's experience. That'll come with it. And just the composure he showed was just incredible. I'd say the biggest surprise for me, not a surprise in a good way, a surprise in the bad way, is probably Aprilia's performance in the main race.
Yeah.
Now, you just said about Espargaró's tyre issues that he had. That was, for me, like, you know, they looked okay. Oliveira as well.
Your boy. That's your boy. You got to stand by him the whole year.
Struggled all weekend. Didn't hear much of Vinales at all. And then Raul Fernandez.
Right, so Raul Fernandez had that issue at the start of the race. It was a technical issue. The bike basically just died on him.
Yeah.
And then he runs with his spare bike.
Yeah, that was a bit hectic. And a little bit unorganized as well. Like, it's just that it didn't seem... It just was that annoying another 6 or 7 minute delay that...
Standard
that at 3 a.m. in the morning that we didn't need, obviously.
Yeah, fuck that.
So, and then the biggest disappointment for me was, Oliveira and Bezzecchi, 14th and 15th in the main race. Yeah, I mean,
good shout.
Yeah, they were nowhere. And look, you don't know the do's and the don'ts, the tyres, this and that. But Bezzecchi on a Ducati.
Yeah.
Real disappointment for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan James, sense. I want to hear your most impressive, your surprise, and your biggest disappointment.
Look, biggest, most impressive, obviously, Pedro Acosta. What he did, obviously, X Factor, it's incredible. He's just, it's like a duck to water, him riding in MotoGP on a year-old bike, made, you know, Jack Miller look like he's standing still. Augusto Fernandez, obviously, can't catch him. He was 17th. Obviously he's going to have to look after his tires a bit better, but you know, credit where credit's due. Like that's an incredible, incredible one. Look, if I was going to change it up, as well and not say Pedro Acosta, I would actually give a shout out to, Johann Zarco and Juan Mir, 12th and 13th, basically dead heat on the line, at least for Honda. They're doing better than last year. So I thought that was pretty impressive as well.
Yeah, they definitely got forgotten about in the coverage. And there was a Japanese fight from 12th to 17th at one point.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. I'd love to get your thoughts, and I'm going to jump in here, your thoughts on Luca Marini. Was there issues? Was there a crash that I didn't know about? Because he finished half his 10th off Miller, who crashed in the first quarter.
So I don't know what's going on there with Marini.
Yeah, that's 42 seconds behind. Like, I think there had to be an issue there because it's 2 seconds a lap slower. I
don't know. I haven't read anything yet for him to come out. All I saw was that there's more work to be done and that he has to do more work on the bike. Like, what else do you say?
What else do you say?
Is he just thinking, holy fuck, like what have I done now? But there's still signs there because you've got me who's 13th and you've got and Zarco.
But James, he's finished 17 seconds behind Nakagami.
Yeah, I know. That doesn't, I don't know.
Doesn't compute.
Like, I actually, like I'm lost for words.
Yeah, there has to be something. Yeah.
And I wouldn't have picked that. Like I wouldn't have picked, realistically, he's a Repsol Honda and he's basically just finished dead last because Jack Miller crashed.
And the bike obviously had shown some sort of spirit because, obviously the results of Zarco and Mir. So, yes, we'll see. Oliveira had a long lap, so that was unlucky. But it's when you get stuck in this pack now, though, James. You just get stuck in this pack and it's just hard to get out of it unless you've just got that super raw pace. So,
yeah, and that's something we will touch on.
Yes.
My surprise is actually Digia. 7th. He crashed in the sprint, but I didn't expect Digia to have the pace that he did in for this year. Like I thought he would kind of fall off and even be like, you know, 10th, maybe the lower Ducati, but you know, 7th still had some good race pace.
He would have been sore as well.
Yeah.
Big crash on the tarmac. Unusual crash.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't know. Like I know Daniel called it. I think he had him almost in his top five or something like that as well. So, you know, good on him. It's a good start for VR46. And then speaking of VR46, most disappointing, Bezzecchi. Like, same thing. I don't know what happened.
I don't even remember him being on the coverage once. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, that's all right. So Guitar always can throw up wacky results. You know, we've got Portimao's the next round. And then once they start going back to like Jerez and these circuits that we know, then all right, then we'll really see what
the
happens.
Cream really rises to the top.
Yeah. What do you think of Marc Marquez?
I mean, where do you start? I mean, I think it was a smart ride.
Yeah.
He didn't make many chances. He was still his old aggressive self on some of those passes on Binder.
Yeah.
Another big surprise to me was Binder throughout the weekend. I mean, we put up on our socials a day or two ago your Ducati, KTM, Ducati, 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 yeah. Ducati. You know, it should write a song about it. But yeah, I mean, Marquez, I've got him for my world championship favorite. I still think he's going to just get stronger and stronger throughout the season. I know obviously that 24 bike's going to have it over it by probably the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, he's just such a he's such an X factor. He's 3.5 seconds behind the leader. I think the start is just so important now.
The start is everything, as Danby said.
Danby, and he got criticized for it.
Criticized for it. He's talking back to all the people. The comments were so funny.
He was.
He was getting abused.
Yeah, yeah. Danby, he doesn't shy away from a bit of conflict. So, yeah, I mean, it's a better start. It could have been completely different. Marquez up there in top two, got comfortable. It could have been a different result. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, 3.5 seconds is nothing over over 20 laps.
Nah, that's right. And I think for Mark, it was a really smart ride. And it's what he had to do.
Yeah.
It wasn't the crash. It wasn't the finish 10th.
Yes.
It would have been great if he podiumed for him, but to get a fourth and a fifth, and he's going to take that all day. And a track that he's not necessarily favours.
Yeah.
He might have only won there once or twice. But coming back into Europe, I think it's going to be, and going into COTA, will be different again. And remember, we're going to Portimao. He got pole in Portimao last year on the Honda. So obviously you might like that track. He's obviously still getting used to the Ducati as well. There's a lot of things that he has to change with that bike and his riding style. But, you know, fourth and the fifth for what he did, he looked fast. I just think, like, when he crashed in 2020 to when he's racing now, MotoGP has changed
dramatically.
So much. And you can see that in how he rides and how everyone else's rides. Because he would normally, who was he following? He was following Martin for a bit and he just couldn't get past. And he cooked his front tire because of the tire pressure. Yeah. Rah, 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 rah. We always talk about it. But if that was a traditional Marc Marquez, he would have been on Jorge Martin. He had the pace. He would have been on his ass and then he would have been putting pressure on him and then he would have done a move and who knows if it would have paid off, he would have passed him or if Jorge Martin was just faster. But you just don't get to see that.
It's just so hard to pass now.
Yeah, it really so is. Hard.
And like you look at 2020, I mean, 4 years ago, how MotoGP has changed. You know, Suzuki won the world championship, Quartararo was up there. Like, it's completely different now. And you got it's reverse. I mean, KTM, Ducati, I mean, it's just incredible. So, yeah, it has changed a lot. That's a really good point you make. And I think
that's a big thing that Mark has to overcome is this new style of fighting for a race win is not necessarily dogging your opponent out of it. It's getting that start or, you know, maybe biding your time to like stay back by 4/10 and then you've got 2 laps to make a pass. It's not just, you know, your classic Marquez or Rossi style where you're just on their ass and follow because you obviously can't do that.
I find that they think about that too much with Bagnaia. They sit on his ass for half a second back, a second back, thinking, oh, he'll cook his tires and we'll pass him. It never happens. Like, it was just frustrating at the start of the race. I'm not the biggest Bagnaia fan, I'll say, but like, I was just thinking, just put a move on him at the inside. He's going to get in the front. He's going to win the race, you know? And it was sort of, and even Martin said after the race in a post-race interview, he was like, I'm just going to sit back. I'm going to look after my tires.
But, it doesn't work.
But Bagnaia was a second. He was going second and a half slower than he was in the sprint. He was just controlling the race.
The race is almost won now within the first 5 laps.
Yeah.
And Bagnaia's is too good. If he's just out in front, he's just going to reel off laps and you're not going to be able to pass him.
I swear that changed second half of last year where you got out in front and you just controlled the pace and you won the race.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're probably right, to be honest.
Because all those Asian races at this sort of the end of the year, apart from Phillip Island, there's always like that controlling of the from the front, and it's continued on to this year.
Yeah, and I guess Qatar's a big one for it because you've got that big massive straight. It's not very stop and starty; it's pretty flowy as well.
I'll go back to the main straight as well. How much straight line speed did the KTM have?
Yeah.
It was there or thereabouts. Yeah, it was there or thereabouts. It probably under braking, Martin still looks so strong, and I think that's where the Ducati is so strong.
Yeah.
But the way Binder flew past Martin a couple of times, I was thinking, geez, and the speed trap said the same thing. So that's going to be an interesting thing this year.
Yeah, and good on Brad Binder. I was looking at him as either my most impressive or biggest surprise, but then I just thought this is what he's there to do. He's on a factory bike. The bike's good. He's there to be competing for Ducatis.
Mid-season swap with Acosta and Miller.
Oh, I know.
Thoughts?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't rule anything out anymore. But yeah, just if we're five races in and Acosta's podiumed and Miller's crashed three of them.
Yeah.
And it's all but done. They'll probably just sign him there and then.
Oh, yeah. I know
we can't sign him for next year anyway.
We can't judge it after two races or a sprint race and a main race, but
a guitar always just throws up wacky results. So, you know, once we get back to Portimao and then the European tracks, they know him well, it'll be different. But I don't know. I'm happy MotoGP's back and I'm happy Pedro Acosta's doing well. It's great to see.
Oh, yeah.
It's such two worlds colliding as well, Marc Marquez versus Pedro Acosta.
Yeah, I mean,
it's such a change in the guard.
It is a change in the guard. And what's so fascinating about it is they are from the same town in the same region of the same country in Spain. So
something in the water.
It's just so interesting. And I'm not sure if they're best of friends. I mean, it's not like they go to the track together and that sort of thing. I mean, it's always hard with those sort of things if you're competing for the same trophy. But it's going to be an interesting dynamic through the whole year, and I'm really excited for that.
Mm, yeah, it's good. And it's good to see different... I obviously want to see the Japanese manufacturers up there, but we had, what do we have? We had a Ducati, a KTM, and an Aprilia on a sprint race podium. So there's different, at least there's different manufacturers up there. And then obviously in the main race, it was all AC Ducatis. But, you know, thank God for Brad Binder and Pedro Acosta at the moment because they're kind of saving it.
Yeah.
And I hope Aleix Espargaró does well. You know, he had a good start to the sprint race, surprised me. Mm. So he came back with awesome late race pace. Maverick Vinales didn't really do much.
Mm.
Standard.
What were they saying about Espargaró in the main race? They just expected him to go back through the pack. Was that, have they got their start device isn't as good as the others? Or
yeah, I know the KTMs are good and the Ducatis are good now as well. So maybe it's a catch up for Aprilia.
Bro, KTM and Brad Binder is a classic example. He had a great start in both sprint and main race. Yeah. He got up to second in the main race and boom, he stayed there.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I know obviously he was having his fight with Martin, but if he then went down to seventh and had to get his way back up, use a bit more tire, it could change, you know? Yeah. It could be a completely different result. So the start is so, so important.
Yeah, it's everything now. And it's just going to be proven to be, especially in these long, sweepy tracks.
Mm.
But yeah, it's... It's impressive. It's very, very impressive. G'day guys, James here from Motorsport Republica. Our brand new t-shirts have dropped. So we have Marquez, we've got Daniel Ricciardo, we've got Verstappen, Charles Leclerc in men and women, and a Gent Lawrence, Hunter Lawrence double champs tee. Jump onto motorsportrepublica.com.au, check out our new tees. We've got air freshener still on there. Go on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. It's all on there. Make sure to check it out. All your support means everything. Thanks, guys.
What's this? Have you seen this thing with Pramac? They got some new team member, apparently.
Yeah, they had a bit of a mystery thing on Instagram today. I don't know. It's probably going to be some sort of promotional sort of event, I assume. But yeah, no, I don't know who it is, but I'm sure we'll find out soon.
Yeah, random, right?
Yeah, very random.
Wonder who it's going
to
be.
Well, I mean...
Ichio switching from VR46 to Pramac.
Possibly. We might go back to that shortly, but Moto 2, what did you think of it? What's your thoughts?
Aaron Canet, seriously, man. He was on pole. He looked like he was going to win the race. And then, like... I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if it was tires. They were saying the race was like a wet race. Everyone was just throwing up wacky times. They'll do one hot lap and then there would be four seconds, you know, slower or 3 seconds slower.
It's crazy.
It just doesn't make, I don't know what he's doing. He was really quick at the start and then just got eaten up. So the results were Moto 2, Alonso Lopez first, back on the winners list. Barry Baltus from Belgium fucking came from the clouds.
Pipped him as well.
Yeah, nearly pipped him. No one saw that coming. Sergio Garcia third, really, 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 really good result for him. you know, rookie last year. He's gonna be one to watch. Iagura fourth, Manny Gonzalez, pod favorite fifth, Marcos Ramirez sixth, Joe Roberts seventh, Albert Arenas eighth, Celestino Vietti ninth, and Aaron Canet finished in 10th. Pre-race favorite, Fermin Aldeguer 16th. Finish outside the points.
Yeah, what's the go there?
He was looking at his front tire, like he had front tire issues. So again, tire issues, Pirelli obviously can create, you know, a good tire over one lap, but maybe they're still working on tire issues over a race distance. Again, pod favorite.
So new tires this year?
Yeah, Pirelli's.
Pirelli's for this year.
Yeah, and then Moto3, Moto2.
Moto3, Moto2. And then MotoGP are running Michelin's.
Yeah, still Michelin's. Yep. And then Senna Agius, pod favourite, 17th.
I mean, finishing ahead of his teammate, Darren Binder, his first race.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
That's all you've got to do. Yeah. You know, Dennis Onchu, your boy, 15th as well, got a point. So, no, it was a really, really good race. It was tied as well. Alonso Lopez just obviously showed class at the end, and he's back on the winners list. So it's good to see. And just, I guess, carrying that momentum from a couple of years ago. You know, he didn't do much last year. He crossed the finish line, was like smashing his screen, smashed at the blitherines, and then jumped off, ran across the he ran across the sand trap, found some Spanish fans, was like climbing the fence. Couldn't get his bike going, and then he was stuck on the side of the track, and he had to get the medical car to take him back to the podium.
Did see footage of that,
which was so funny. Yeah. So I don't know, Aaron Canet. Are you ever gonna win a fucking race? Like going back to 10th,
he'll win a race this year. My early prediction: Dennis Onchu. It's gonna take a while to get used to the bike. It looks like probably my prediction was a bit far fetched.
What did you say to win the title?
Yeah, he's been crying out for that bigger bike for a while.
Well, you got points at least, or you got a point. So, I don't know. Moto2 is a hard one though. Like it normally takes them so long to get used to it, unless you're like you're an Alex Rins or a Marc Marquez or a Pedro Acosta. Like the biggest one who's kind of got used to it so quickly at the moment, Sergio Garcia. Like he was a rookie last year. And now he had some really good races. I think he almost podiumed last year, and then he got a podium first round. So, hey, good on him.
It is interesting. We talk about MotoGP and Pedro Acosta and how that diamond, you know, like diamond in a rough. They're very rare. They're very hard to come by. And there's these guys that jump on these bikes and just win championships in their first or second year. It is incredible. And we probably take it for granted to a certain extent.
Do you think that the finding a diamond like a Marquez, Rossi, possibly Acosta, is that a once in every 10 years
event? Well, it seems to be. I mean, look at the last 30 years. You've got Rossi, you've got Marquez, and you've got possibly Pedro Acosta.
Yeah, and then before that you had Doohan.
Doohan.
And then before that was Kenny Roberts Sr. So, yeah, it probably is every 10 years. Like, something just happens.
Same thing in Formula One.
Yeah. I mean,
you've got your Michael Schumacher, Alonso to a certain extent, and then you had your Lewis Hamilton come around. So, and then Max Verstappen after that. So, yeah, I mean, you look at Dennis Onchu jumping on that bike, been crying out for a bigger bike the whole time as he'd been Moto3 and finishes 15th and he's not right up there.
Mm.
Is the kid going to be a star? Star?
Yeah, can he come
back from this? And obviously, get a good result, come back next year. Is he going to be a star in MotoGP? Who knows?
You don't know. I guess a good example is Casey Stoner. Like, he went into 250s first, did nothing, went back to 125s, fought for a title, went to 250s, fought for a title, never won, lost to Danny Pedrosa, who was, you know, the next big thing. And then Casey Stoner was the one to be the man. You know, take Rossi, and then Danny Pedrosa unfortunately never won a, you know, GP title.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. He's probably the only outlier because you look at Rossi, probably won everything in his junior categories.
Yeah, he did.
Marquez missed out on that Moto2 championship.
No, he won second year Moto2.
Yeah, but he missed out on his first year Moto2. Yeah, I mean, these guys, they come in and they win straight away. And Marquez really should have won that first year.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Rossi, I think, had a year or two in 125s.
Mm.
Then won a title, and then in 250s he got second in his first year, won a title in his second year,
500s. He got second in his first year, won a title in his second year. So, but Casey Stoner, I guess is the outlier. Like Lorenzo dominated all through, you know, his junior years, especially in the 250s. Pedrosa did the same thing. Dovi won a Moto 125cc title. So, yeah, it does. I don't know. It just seems like to find that superstar, yeah, it's once every 10 years.
Let's jump on to Moto 3.
All right, our boy, Jacob Rulestone, and Joel Kelso as well.
Yeah, both in the top 10. It's incredible effort in the first race for Rulestone and obviously on the new team for Kelso as well.
Yep. So first, David Alonso, amazing ride. He came from like fourth, just watched all the action happen around him and then last corner win, pips Danny Holgado. So David Alonso first, Danny Holgado second, Tyro Furisado third, Ricardo Rossi fourth, Colin Vaya fifth, Stefano Nepa sixth, Tatsuki Suzuki seventh, Joel Kelso, pod favorite eighth, Ivan Ottola ninth, and Jacob Rulston 10th.
Special shout out to Furisato. I mean, that Honda does not look anywhere near the KDM.
I know.
So that's a great, great result for him. And they've been speaking highly of him in the last... I mean, I watched practice on Friday and they were speaking quite highly of him for a name that's not normally on the front of your tongue, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. So good on him. Like, you know, Honda need a win somewhere. Like, and they need something. So it's from like a 17-year-old Japanese kid on a Honda Team Asia.
It was fascinating what they were saying, the commentators. They were saying like Honda has put all of their resources into their MotoGP team at the moment because it's struggling so much. Mm. And they've, to a certain extent, forgotten about these junior categories. Yeah. And that's why KTM's made this massive leap.
Yeah.
With a whole new bike this year.
And it's just so much faster down the straights. Like, that's the bike to be on.
Yeah, and it was really interesting. They said that, you know, a few years ago when KTM came into MotoGP, they started, you know, they didn't have the results in their junior categories that they wanted. So,
yeah,
fascinating. And I found that really interesting.
Well, if you look at the top 10, there's only one Honda.
Yeah.
The rest of them is essentially a KTM. It's either a Husqvarna, KTM, or a GasGas.
Yeah, they're all KTMs, I suppose, aren't they? What's Ricardo Rossi on?
Ricardo Rossi's on a KTM.
Yep.
Yeah. CRP Green Power. Speaking of them, there's a video up there. You can look it up. They tried to release one of the CRP Green Power Moto3 riders with the tire blanket still on.
Oh, my God.
Going in the qualifying. And it got like wrapped in the whole bike. Oh, it was a whole shit
show.
That's
Kelso's old team, isn't it?
That's Kelso's old team. But yeah, shout out to Joel Kelso, you know, eighth. He was up there. He gambled on a soft front tire, I think it was. And he just lost. It was either a soft front or a soft rear. He just lost feeling, you know, like 10 laps in. Basically nursed it back to eighth, but he was right there. Gambling on tires, like, I don't know why people do it though, seriously. Like, that doesn't ever seem to pay off.
I can't. I was thinking about this the other day because you made that point. Like, I can't remember. Like, maybe Marcus Winkelhoff in 2007 European F1 Grand Prix when he gambled on the extreme wets, led the race for like five, the one lap, and then he had a hydraulic failure.
Who was he racing for?
Bro, they're going to kill me at home for not knowing this, but it was orange, and it was orange and black livery. It wasn't Arrows, it was, I think.
Yeah,
right. Bro, he puts it's dry, puts the extreme wets on.
And it just pisses down.
Pisses down.
What track?
Sounds
like Spa. Nürburgring. Oh, right, there you go.
Famous footage of about eight cars flying off the front straight into the gravel trap and started to
run. Oh, that's mad. Mm. The only other one I can think of that paid off was when Binder, I think he stayed out.
In Austria, yeah.
Yeah, yep. That's a little bit different, but stayed out on the slicks and just nursed at home.
But, like going back to MotoGP, when's someone gone, like, they're gone, like, everyone goes, you know, hard rears, hard fronts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then someone goes, oh, I'm going to put a soft front on it.
It just never works.
It never works.
I've never seen it work. If anyone's listening that can think of a time, let us know. Like, just DM us.
I know Martin likes a soft tire, and last year went to the soft tire a lot in the race, but... Yeah, I don't remember him going on the soft and then everyone else not going on the soft and him still winning the race.
He gambled at Phillip Island and it didn't pay off.
No, that's again great. Yeah, that's where this whole thing started with the the gambling.
It just never works.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I might have to go to AA, I reckon, these people to keep doing it.
It's something. But, like, that's stupid to gamble that scenario, like fighting for a championship. Just play it safe like Bagnaia does, you know?
I don't know. Just, yeah, like, you know, because you can still get a top five. Like, yeah, it's better than coming 12th or crashing out because your tires are cooked. But, yeah, Jacob Roulston, congrats, top 10. That's a really good effort.
Amazing effort. Amazing effort. And, the first race on that bike in that scenario with all those aggressive young riders, you know, it's an amazing effort. He's done it. He did a great job.
Yeah, fuck yeah. And I think he started like 17th or something like that. So
18th, yeah, I think,
And I watched him try and, you know, get all the way through the pack. And then obviously that big group split and he was just on the front of the second group. So
yeah, it's almost like a Tour de France scenario when there's crosswinds and the pack split and it's very hard to get back up to the front.
It's impossible because, like, especially on Moto3, they're getting an extra 10Ks down the straight just on that front group. And then if you're even just by yourself or on that other second group, it's very hard to keep up, or you just can't do it. But that's MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3. What I just wanted to touch on with you as well is, what do you see happening with Repsol Honda? You've had Marini just have a fucking stinker of a weekend. Mm. You had Mir, okay, he did pretty good. I think he got, 15th in the sprint and 13th in the main race, and you had Zarco 12th. Like, is there going to be, like they say, there's going to be big improvement at the end of the year? It doesn't fill me with confidence when Marini has that type of race.
We have to find out more about that because it just doesn't make sense. I tried to look online today,
I don't think there was anything. I really don't think there was anything.
They got the riders. There's no question about that. They got Zarco with the experience. They got a world champion in Mir, and then they've got Marini as well. And Nakagami's just a gap filler, obviously. But
at least he's got experience. Like, he knows what a bad bike is. Mm. And he knows, I'm sure he'll still be able to help develop that bike. No language barrier, at least.
Yeah. I just think you have to just start again now with these Japanese bikes. You just can't compete with these Ducatis and KTMs. They've just got to build them from ground up, it sounds like. And I think Honda are doing that to a certain extent. But I guess
it's going to take time. I just didn't expect that type of result. I expected Marini to be where Marco Bezzecchi is, Miguel Oliveira, 14th, 15th, but not.
It's a horror weekend. Horror weekend. There's no question about it. I mean, time's going to tell. I mean, we're sitting here. It's after the first race. That's all we have to work off at the moment. We have to look back at testing. Testing, you looked okay. So, Portimao is this traditional, more of a circuit. It's obviously a roller coaster of a circuit, but that's going to be the interesting one.
Yeah, Portimao, then going into Coda. Traditionally, Honda's pretty good at that track with Marc Marquez and Alex Rins obviously winning last year.
Yep.
And then going into the European rounds, and that's where obviously the cream rises to the top. That's where these riders are going to know the tracks really well. Mm. I'm really looking forward to it. There's so much intrigue into this year for so many different reasons. Like, you've got, you know, Martin versus Pecco, you've got Repsol Honda, what are they doing? You've got Pedro Acosta now. You've got all the Ducatis, you've got Jack Miller, what's going to happen with him? Mm. Like, there's just so much intrigue.
It's even super exciting watching practice.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's just super exciting seeing who's fast over the weekend. Yep. I mean, and that sprint race just adds another dynamic to the MotoGP on the weekend. So, yeah.
Yep.
It's super exciting. Like, how it's super exciting. I mean, it really is.
Can't wait. VR46 as well has a 2-year option on the table of Ducati, ready to go.
Okay.
Uccio got interviewed by pod favorite Simon Crafer. I know he's come out and said he wants to sign off Ducati. I don't know. There's obviously reasons in play if there's an option on the table why they haven't. It was actually Jack Appiata. He probed and said, well, are you speaking to anyone else? And he couldn't comment. So he obviously is. And there's obviously going to be Yamaha playing that.
Yeah, but I mean, Adorna going to step in and say you're only allowed 6 bikes per manufacturer? Is like, what's going to happen? Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think it'd be silly not just to take that deal for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Wait to see what they do with Yamaha, what they do with Honda.
I think the Rossi ambassador thing's stopping that.
But it sounds like Yamaha need them more than they need Yamaha, to be honest with you.
Fucking oath. Mm. Look at Digia. You know, Bezzecchi's going to come good. Like, yeah, he's 20 seconds off the pace, but he's going to come good. He's a salt and cold, but, you know. Look at Marc Marquez. He left Honda and now he's fourth and fifth.
Yeah, I know. It's a massive difference.
And then last thing before we switch to F1, they changed Q2 entry into qualifying to Q3. Because it basically started raining.
Practice you're talking
about. Yeah. So, practice.
So they changed from, they had practice one, then they've got
practice two.
Well, practice two is actually on Saturday.
It's like free practice or whatever it is.
So that's qualifying practice. Yeah. So they changed the qualifying practice from the Friday afternoon to the Saturday morning. Which is a good, great thing they did.
Yeah, but they switched it because I think it was on the Friday Jack Miller was complaining saying that, I don't know if I'm getting confused now, but Jack Miller was saying we shouldn't have... Q1, Q2 entry should have been on the Friday.
Mm.
But that got switched to the Saturday because it was raining.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, should they switch that because of rain?
Well, it's a hard one because I think the other thing is, I don't think it's ever rained in Qatar.
Yeah, it's rained like twice in like 1,000 years.
Yeah. So I think it's a real like anomaly for that to happen.
Yeah.
And I think... Dorna doing Dorna things.
Start from pit lane.
Yeah. I mean, they probably should have just left it in hindsight, but it probably would have been better for the fans if they left it. But you don't want a Marquez starting from 15th on the first race of the year. You don't want that. I mean, he's going to get up to maybe 11th and then we've got nothing to talk about. So I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know who's behind that, but I think... You want all the fast guys at the front. Yeah. Who's the fastest is going to win? They know there's a problem with... They've got to know there's a problem with passing an aero.
Yeah.
That's what's happened in the last couple of years. So, yeah. It's Dorna doing Dorna things.
It's making stuff up on the fly.
Yeah.
I think their reasoning was because it's... Which is true is it's glary when it rains under lights for the GP riders. And it was actually quite... It got quite muddy because all the sand as well. I was saying the bikes are weirdly...
Bro, it would have been super dangerous them trying to do fast laps in the rain as well. So, and when they have no experience in the rain there and it's the first race of the year, there's going to be rookies on wet tyres. They probably never... Probably had hardly any wet tyre running as well.
Mm.
So, I understand why they did it.
Mm. Yeah, I like it. Makes sense. Hey guys, it's James from Motorsport Republica. Just want to give a shout out to HJC Australia. They have a brand new helmet coming out, the R412. Make sure you head down to your local dealer to check it out. It's got max defogging, 4 intakes, 3 exhaust vents. It comes with 4 different shell sizes and 5 different liners. It's got lift force and drag force reduced, optimized air ventilation. This helmet is an awesome new street helmet. Make sure you check it out. Go to hjc.com. Go to your local dealer and you better grab yours today. Thanks.
F1.
Mate, what a weekend.
Yes, yes. Race was better. I enjoyed the race.
Race was good.
Race was good. And I mean, I think we got to start with Ollie Bearman, man.
Take us to the results, Tom.
Well, the results is probably going to be the number one thing to talk about initially. It's going to be Verstappen winning, Perez second. Now, yes, it was an absolute whitewash. Did we see Verstappen much on the TV? No, we didn't.
Nah, that was crazy. I saw American for like a minute.
Perez getting a 5 second penalty didn't even pop up. Like, because they're like, oh, he's going to win by five more than, he's going to come second by more than 5 seconds anyway. Charles Leclerc, third. Piastri, great result, fourth.
Bro, fourth, amazing.
Great result. And that McLaren was so slow down the straight. He was stuck behind Hamilton for so long.
Yeah, he was. Couldn't get past.
Super frustrating. Alonso, great result, fifth. George Russell, 6th. Ollie Bearman, 7th. Incredible. Debut race. starting 11th. Finishing in front of Norris, front of Hamilton. Crazy result. So, obviously, Norris and Hamilton. All 4 Brits from 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
That's crazy, isn't it?
And then Hülkenberg scoring a point, which is fantastic. And we're going to run through the K-Mag wingman's amazing effort from him holding the pack up. which is kind of ridiculous, but kind of awesome at the same time.
I like it. I like it.
Let's do the same thing, James. Let's just go straight into your most impressive, you know,
surprising and disappointing.
All
right. So mine is obviously going to be pretty stock standard. So my most impressive and my most surprising, obviously both Oliver Bearman. I never even heard of this person, I'm not going to lie, until he fucking sat in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
So to get points, I want to know, you obviously know a lot more about Formula One than me, but so I'd love to get your thoughts on it. I don't think he scored points. Have I heard he hasn't scored points in F2 this year? And then...
Well, yeah, he only had the one race, obviously. Okay. He didn't race F2 this week, and he actually was going to start on pole.
Oh, okay,
but right. But then he obviously got put in the Ferrari seat. And I'm not sure if he got replaced in F2. Someone will have to correct me on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a reserve driver for Haas.
Yeah.
He's done a couple of practice sessions. But yeah, I mean, just to be thrusted into an F1 drive on probably arguably the scariest and fastest track on the calendar. Incredible. I mean, to learn the hybrid engine, to learn the tires, to learn everything in head one, you know, he had an hour practice session before qualifying, and then to nearly get into Q3. It's an incredible. I don't know how they do it.
Is he on the simulators a lot?
It's there's, but like, and
like the real thing's obviously different.
I'll clip this photo in because the viewers at home have to see it. His neck was finished by the end of the race.
Yeah, okay, right.
Even in qualifying, and there's a photo of the side. So he's obviously got the cockpit, and he's got a protector around his head.
Yeah.
It's actually mushed in on the left-hand side because his head's just been hitting it, like leaning on it the whole time. Jesus. So much G-forces, and it is probably the hardest track on the calendar for that.
Yeah.
So that just has to go without saying, like, yes, they're athletes. Yeah, he drives a F2 car around there, but that's 12-second lap slower.
Mm.
You know, it's a different kettle of fish, yeah, you know, completely different animal. It's like... It's almost going from, I would say, probably MotoGP to Moto3, to be honest. Like, it's that different. Yeah. So, and your biggest disappointment?
It's going to be a bit different, but it's Carlos Sainz's appendix.
Yeah, I mean, from a man who had a appendicitis at a bad moment, I mean, you can feel for him, obviously.
Yeah. So, the appendicitis has had all of off-season to fuck up. Like, why does it have to be in round two? Like, it's so annoying. You've lost all those points.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been on the podium. Who knows? Obviously, he wasn't going to win it, but...
But he looked great last week.
Yeah, that's right. He had a really good start to the year, but, like, Ferrari doing Ferrari things.
Yes.
The appendicitis blows.
I know, crazy. And, yeah, I mean, he had surgery. He was back in the paddock the day after, but, yeah, poor bastard. He looked pretty cooked. Yeah, he did. He was ginger.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's not good. I'll tell listeners, when I had my appendicitis, we actually went dirt bike riding, and I had a big off. I reckon that flared it up, and I went back to selling bikes at the time, and I did a deal with this guy, and I was looking over at the desk, and I was in so much pain, I started hallucinating, and he was like he looked like the Joker.
So you're signing the contract.
Yeah, yeah, and I looked up at him. No, he looked like a clown, sorry. I was hallucinating that this man was a clown. He was like talking to me, and I was cooked, man.
And the pain in the appendix?
Yeah, pain. I went straight to the doctors, and then he sold three bikes, actually, hallucinating that day. It was one of my proudest moments. And then, yeah, I went straight to the hospital, and they put me under. I was cooked. That was painful, so I feel for him.
That is a great story. That is a great story. Well, I'll follow up from the back of yours. My definitely the most impressive was young Ollie Bearman, and he had an unbelievable weekend. I mean, they said 72 hours before the race, he was, you know, not even thinking about jumping in an F1 car. To do what he did is incredible, and it's going to be interesting. He'll be on the market for next year. We'll see if a stake F1 or a Haas want to pick him up, because, you know, he's obviously in that Ferrari academy.
Mercedes.
We'll see. Surprising for me was Hülkenberg's points. So Hulk getting that one point was awesome, all thanks to the K-Mag. Mm-hmm. Him holding up those Alpine Tsunoda. Like, it was hilarious.
Yeah,
it was a comical of errors from Tsunoda. I mean, he had him so many times he could have passed him. He ran wide, he did this, and then he went back and then got passed by Ocon. And then Ocon, the Alpine's so slow, so he couldn't then get past Magnussen. And Magnussen's just going, you know, fuck you guys. He had a 20-second penalty. So, I mean, it was hilarious to watch. But what really shocked me, and this goes into my most disappointing, is Daniel Ricciardo. So
yeah,
when all this was happening, K-Mag was holding up the pack. Ricciardo couldn't even get to the back of the pack. I mean, he was just struggling so much. He had a botched pit stop that put him far back. They didn't catch on the coverage, but I've got that from a reliable source. So, yeah, I mean, Ricciardo, he span with about 5 laps to go. You know, Tsunoda got a late race 5-second penalty for an unsafe release on Norris, and he still didn't finish ahead of him. So I've been searching the archives today to find out if there's anything else happened. He like our Luca Marini, but... Mm. Yeah, it just seemed like he had a really off weekend. So let's hope he can come to Australia with all his friends and family here and have a really, really strong result in that car.
Yeah.
Because he does really love this track. And he
normally does pretty good.
He normally does really good. Then he does really good.
Most disappointing was that was Ricciardo, wasn't
Ricciardo.
It?
Ricciardo, yeah. Yep.
Gasly retiring first lap.
Yes.
Alpine.
Yeah.
It's just going bad to worse, isn't it?
Bad to worse. Bad to worse. And I forgot about this, but halfway through last season, there was some investment from a large company in the States. They put some real money into this team. So it's just, it's interesting. It's not a lack of cash. It's not a lack of both two talented drivers, but obviously just gone the wrong route with aerodynamics and engine. Engine seems to be the problem.
Yeah.
And then when you have a slow engine.
And an overweight, aren't they? Overweight or something? Yeah. As well? They're a pretty heavy car.
Pretty heavy car. And this goes back to, you know, you got underpowered, so you'd make the car more less draggy, and then you're not going to have as much downforce. I mean, it's just a problem all around. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We spoke about this last week, factory team, they have to be fighting up there. They have to be in top 10.
Yeah, fucking oath.
Because the rest of the pack's just leaving them.
Bad.
Do you reckon Mercedes has gone backwards? I mean, just as
I was going to ask that.
Yeah.
Like,
again, my early prediction, second in the championship, but yeah. It might seem a little bit far-fetched at this stage.
Well, with Formula One, things can turn around. McLaren last year.
Upgrades, big thing. I mean, it's big different to MotoGP where they bring these big floor upgrades, front wing upgrades, rear wing upgrades, and it changes the whole car.
Formula One, if you ever want to predict what MotoGP is, it's just Formula One's like 15 years ahead of MotoGP.
Yeah.
That's just all it is.
Yeah.
They have gone backwards. Like George Russell 6th, Hamilton 9th. Mm. Like, you know, fuck. When do you ever see Hamilton 9th?
They gambled on the tyres. They stayed out longer with Hamilton. No, it didn't really pay off. But again, it could have been completely different if they put a safety car out there. Yeah. Again, I mean, sometimes you got to roll the dice if you haven't got the faster car. And that was a big showing for me that they rolled the dice for him because they know their car is not fast enough to compete for a podium.
And this goes back to did Hamilton know this from the start, and that's why he signed for Ferrari?
That's a very good point.
You know? So I think he did. Like, he's not stupid. He's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and then he's still got another year as well. So they need, obviously, do something for George Russell and then whoever else is in that car next year.
Yeah.
Whoever that's going to be.
We've got Australia in 2 weeks.
Looking forward to that.
We should do a pre-Australia show next week, lead up to the Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of messages from people wanting to catch up. And there's going to be we're going to be there on the Friday.
Yeah.
So we'll speak about this next week on the show, but yeah, super excited. It does seem like Red Bull are absolutely dominating. What was really interesting for me was this track was totally different surface to Bahrain. So Red Bull's big strong point is their tyre conservation. I think Saudi Arabia has the smoother surface, so tyres aren't a big problem with wear as they were in Bahrain. And they just were streaks ahead. Yeah. So, I mean, Verstappen was absolutely cruising and finished 20 seconds up, in front of Leclerc. So.
If you can pick a race just early on for this year where Verstappen's not going to win or Red Bull is not going to win, just straight off the top of your head, what track's that going to be?
Miami, maybe.
Miami.
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
Oh, just it's such an unusual layout.
Okay.
Singapore, they didn't perform well last year.
Yeah.
similar layout. So that's one that probably creeps into my head, only because obviously Miami's in a few weeks' time. So
yeah, okay, all right, I like it.
But we'll see. I mean, it's they might win every race, James, and this might go down in history as the best season ever, surpassing last season, which
I did call that. Red Bull's going to win every race.
Your predictions are looking a bit better than my predictions at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's the classic when you know a lot about it. It's like footy tipping. It's like the person that does footy tipping knows nothing about footy always wins the fucking comp. Because you always overthink it.
You overanalyze it.
Yeah.
Overthink it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's right. You've got a clear conscience and looking at it in a totally different way.
You know, without... bias coming into it.
Yeah. 100%.
And I'm a big Verstappen fan. I like Verstappen. I like how he goes about it.
Yeah.
But like, I just don't. The only thing that's going to stop Red Bull is Red Bull themselves. That's Christian Horner banging Helmut Marko, whatever his name is, or whatever it is. Like, bro, what's going on there?
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I've been trying to avoid talking about it because it's been the bullshit media crap, as it usually is, fake news. But what's coming out this week is Jos Verstappen, Max's dad, is apparently boinking the chick that Corner's been the sending the abusive text messages to. So my goodness, how crazy it's is
like,
this,
bro? It's like Drive to Survive mix of maths or something like that. Like, bro, it's fucking crazy.
Drive to Survive producers have like bloody,
they've been creaming themselves
this last week. So obviously that's created another tension. Helmut Marko putting his two cents in. Verstappen saying, if you're going to get rid of Helmut Marko, I'm going as well.
Yeah.
Because Helmut Marko was the single reason Max Verstappen is in that Red Bull car.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic.
And he's always been pretty crazy.
Bro, if they weren't going well, it'd be a shit storm.
Yeah.
But it's a results industry.
Fucking oath.
And
think of the money they're generating from winning all these races and championships.
But, yeah, I mean, firing someone doesn't just make the story go away. It actually makes the story bigger and worse. Yeah. So, man, Christian Horner's been the head of that team since it started. You know, he's brought this team from, you know, 7-8 championships in the last 15 years. He's brought them from the brink. He's brought them back up after the Mercedes dominance. He deserves to go when he wants to go.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Again, bias opinion.
I would love to know how this exact same situation would play out 15 years ago when there was no massive media coverage. Like, just to say it was 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
And Vettel was winning. I reckon it would have been swept under the rug and we wouldn't even be hearing about this.
Nah. Well, the whole world's changed.
The whole world has changed.
Yeah, the whole world's changed and it's changed in a lot of ways.
You can't fart these days without people putting it out on social media.
It doesn't matter what you say, so someone will find it offensive.
Yeah. Oh, fucking nice. So, especially in that game now.
Well, Jesus. Yeah. I mean, the whole world's... We'll wake up from this woke thing we've been in the last few years and we'll realize how ridiculous it was, but hopefully that comes sooner rather than later because it's affecting... There's nothing worse than affecting sport.
And that's the whole reason why people watch sport, whether it be golf, football, MotoGP, Formula One, politics has traditionally always stayed out of it. It's the one thing
it's you can release.
Do. Yeah, let your steam out. Like you go to the footy, for our international listeners, you know, you watch AFL or something like that. You know, you can go every week and yell whatever you want.
Yep.
It's your release. And it's the same thing of watching motorsport, whatever it is.
It's just, and then, I mean, the last 10 years, I mean, it's slowly just crept into it. One knee with national anthems and, you know, banning grid girls, this and that. I mean,
craziness.
No one can say anything because you just get torn apart. So,
how it is, though. It's dumb. It's fucking dumb. Not this podcast, but we say what we think.
Yes, and no one will stop us.
No, that's right.
Until we get taken off YouTube.
Yeah, we got Spotify. It's all right. We'll get a $200 million Spotify deal like Joe Rogan. Like Ray Jogan. Fuck it. I want to know, we've spoken about early previews of Formula One.
Yep.
Let's go back to MotoGP.
Yes.
We've seen the first rounds.
Yes.
How do you see the season playing out after the first round? I know it's a crazy question, but I like playing these games.
I'm going to say my Oliveira prediction probably not going to happen for top five in the championship. That's fine. I'm probably closer to saying Martin looks better than Marquez to a certain extent. I mean, if Marquez came out and blew up and won the first race, yes, it's a different story. It might take a little bit longer than we thought, but it's still an amazing result fourth. Like, I'm not taking anything away from that, please. But yeah, Bagnaia, again, it comes from a biased state. I mean, him getting to the front controlling race, just don't let him do that.
Yeah.
Okay, you get past in the second corner, Binder, just chuck it up, whatever you can do at the inside on the third corner. I mean, just kind of have to stop this guy.
Binder will win it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting talking to these guys and talking to the riders the last 6 months like we've done. And we look at it as, oh my God, he's going to win the championship. Binder's thinking, yeah, I have a chance at the championship, but I really want to consolidate a second in the championship. So why would I go out and try to crash to get a race win when I can sit in second place? So
same thing with Martin, I guess, in third.
What do you think? What's your thoughts on it?
After the first race, I obviously did pick Marquez, and like, he did what he should have done. Now, the one thing I probably didn't consider is, when I watched that race, is how different racing has changed from when he was last up there. Because we haven't really seen him up there since Aero and everything's really taken over. Can I still see him winning the championship? Yes, I can, especially going into Europe. But like, it's realistically, take Marquez out of the picture. Let's just forget about him for a second. For me, it's a three-person race, and it's going to be Pecco, Martin, Binder. That's who I think. I don't think you can be a Bezzecchi and win a title when you start off how he did. I just don't think, and he's on an old bike. I just don't think that's how it's going to be. For Marquez, yes, I can still see him doing it, but it's, if he wins a title, it's not going to be how he would traditionally win it. You know, he's really going to have to build into the season and get used to his bike.
Well, you made such a great point at the start of the pod. You were saying he can't just sit behind until three laps to go and then just fucking hammer time.
You can't. It's so different now.
Yeah. It's a different way of riding the bike.
And that's probably one thing I really didn't think of until, you know, now that we're watching it, that's the way to ride. And I think Pecco is now bred to ride like that, and he knows. Like, he's the best at doing that.
Yeah.
With Martin second.
I don't think... And you'll agree with me on this. Pecco was not the most talented rider out there.
I think there's better riders, but he's just the best rider
for this current generation.
Yeah. And like, credit where credit's due. Yeah. Like, you know, he's very, 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 very good.
I don't know how this guy, you know, he finishes 12th in practice, has a terrible Friday, qualifies 5th or 6th, and then finishes 4th in the, or 3rd in the sprint, or 4th.
He's such a Sunday
man. And then
man.
Wins. And wins and doesn't get even challenged for the win.
He's just a Sunday man. He just conserves his tires. He just gets out in front. That's just how you do it. Like, he knows how to win. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. Going back into Europe, it's going to be interesting. Another big thing is Enea Bastianini.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's improved since last year. Again, he's there or thereabouts.
6th in a sprint.
They're going to be all taking points off each other. That's the thing.
5th in the main.
Yeah. I mean, they're all going to be taking points off each other. Even Alex Marquez looked pretty good on that bike.
And Alex Marquez only 6 seconds behind. Bastianini 5 seconds behind. So,
yeah. And there was a lot of difference. I mean, Pedro Acosta went from a comfortable 4th to finishing 9th in 3 laps. So, things can fall off the wagon so quickly.
I don't know. It's just, it's obviously for Formula One, you look at it, as Red Bull's already sewn it up. For MotoGP, I still think anything can still happen. Like, there's 4 riders there that can, 5 riders there that could still win the title. But
I'll tell you one thing though, my biggest excitement for the season was seeing Marquez. Now my biggest excitement is Pedro Acosta.
Fuck yeah,
get on the train.
Yeah,
because it's coming.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
Choo choo.
No racing this week. So, yeah, I'm not sure what we're going to be doing. We might have to put, is the Superbikes on? No, they got a 5-week break or something. So
depressing.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, there's no tips.
No tips. Well, we'll see you possibly next week for a preview show of the Australian Grand Prix, or we might release one of our special guests. We'll see what we feel like doing.
Yeah, true. Cool. Whatever we want. Thanks. Spotify deal, $200 million. Come at us.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Hey, mate. Thanks, mate.
See ya. Cheers, see you guys. Bye.